Okay, we continue. Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And the Jewish people lost the first battle against the Plishtim. And instead of doing proper tshuva, they brought out the holy Aron HaKodesh, the Aron with the Luchos, and with Chathni and Pinchas. And this was something most drastic of a measure. When the Plishtim saw this, they got very scared. But then they said, we have to strengthen ourselves. We have to be a Plishtim. They said, we have to be Anoshim Plishtim, to strengthen ourselves. And they fought against the Jews, and the Jews lost a great battle of 30,000 people. So there's a piece from Rav Tzadok that's worthwhile to go through. And just pass that out. It's not a long piece. And it really discusses the idea of what the Plishtim are all about, and what the real battles between the Plishtim and the Jewish people are all about. Wasn't anticipating a lot of people here today. It's from Rav Tzadok's Likutei Amorim. And let's see what he has to say. He's going back on the idea of digging the wells. And that was the whole issue that Yitzchak and Avram and Yitzchak did in the area of the Plishtim. Specifically in the area of the Plishtim. With Avimelech, the whole idea of digging the well. So he says, Ki'inin chafiris be'eros de'ovos hoye ketam yagati motzosi. The idea of digging the wells, which our patriarchs did, was the same concept as it says in Gemara Megillah, yagati motzosi. If a person works very hard to discover Torah learning, then Hashem blesses him that he is able to find, as it were, the object of what he's trying to learn. And similarly, with the digging of the wells, as he will explain. V'shamati, and I heard, da'achar yigia, that after you work hard, yigia means you're working hard, but he motze mitzia, then you find something as if it's a mitzia. Mitzia is like a lost object. Dover shehu shelo b'yigiyaso, it's like something without making any effort. In other words, it's a contradiction in terms, yigati matzasi. Yigati means I work very hard. Matsasi means, I happen to find a lost object. I found it. Usually when you find something, it does not involve a lot of work. That's what he says, the mitziyahi bezradas. When you find something, it's something that just happens. You're not thinking about it. Somebody lost it, and you come upon it. Velobiyagia, it doesn't have a lot of effort. But the answer is, so how do we resolve that contradiction? The answer is, rakmi kol mokom luleyagia zu lohayamotzeze. If you didn't make the effort, then you wouldn't have found that item. And that's how it relates to Torah. Torah, you work very hard, you try to understand the Gemara, but at the end of the day, Hashem gives it to you as a gift. But He only gives it to those for a gift, for those who are making a lot of effort. So if when you're working very hard, don't take a lot of credit for the accomplishments in Torah learning that you have, because at the end of the day, Torah wisdom is beyond us. And only with a lot of effort does Hashem bless you, that helps you find that Torah wisdom. But without that yigia, without that hard effort, Hashem's not going to bless you. So that's the idea of yigati umatzasi in Torah learning. V'chein be'er mayim, so it is with a well of water. Hare ha'mayim shom mitzuyim rak al yidei yigia dechafira. That the water, you only find it through the hard effort of digging. The chavira humotzi osam kach, the person finds it where the water is. But what do you find? That kol yigia sa adam limtsa oso mayin novea shebelev mimkor achaim isbarach shemo. That you're trying to find through your efforts, you're trying to find a wellspring in the heart of the depths, of the roots of where Hashem can give it to you. So that's the idea of digging. The idea of digging into these wells, as we'll see a little bit more, and we explained that a couple of weeks ago, the idea of the Be'er Mayim Chaim, trying to find those lower waters, those waters that are harder to reach, take a lot more effort, and the spiritual, it's obviously referencing the spiritual qualities that are within a person, and you're trying to bring them out that are very deep. So that's what you're making a lot of effort. You have to work very hard to bring out that which is buried beneath the surface. But at the end of the day, it's a gift that Hashem gives you that you're able to uncover it. Because you can have people digging and digging for water and they're not going to find any water. So you have to have a gift from Hashem. So what's the idea here? Ulechem plishtim sitmu. And what did the plishtim do to all the wells that Avram dug? They covered them up. So what's the idea? So now he explains the whole idea of the plishtim. Ki inyan plishtim, the idea of plishtim comes from the word, it's two words that people aren't very used to seeing, but it's the word pleshes yam. Pleshes yam means like exploration of the sea. Pleshes yam, trying to uncover and reveal things that are hidden beneath the sea. So, or expansion of the sea. And let's see how he explains this. But that's what the word plishtim, pleshes yam. It's a contraction of two words, pleshes yam. Perish, meaning, shenikraim kain, they're called this way, al shem iskam lefalesh levakesh bamakim. Because their whole occupation is to explore and to look into the depths. Okay? Ki inyan nechusi yama, like the people who are deep sea divers. Lahalos matmonos shebayam, to find the buried treasures in the sea. She said, "Gam kein yigia." That's also a lot of effort. Lim tzodavar, to find something shikfar hu motzi sham, that's already there. These people who spend large amounts of money to find sunken ships off the coast of whatever forsaken Mediterranean seaport, and it's worth lots of money. But you can send expeditions. You can come up with nothing. And that's the idea. The police team, they would, you know, be explorers, as it were. But the difference is that what were they exploring? Rak shehu be'iska yolam hazeh. They're only looking to find things of this worldly nature. They're focusing on finding physical pleasures by their explorations. Now, you see, obviously, the plishtim were on the coast. They lived on the coast. Aza, Ekron, Ashkelon. Those are all the coast seaports. So, obviously, if they lived by the sea, part of their work was to be sailors. So they'd explore the seas, as it were. But the whole focus of these seafaring people were to find things for this physical, worldly activities. That's what they were looking for. That's all. Now, how is that opposed to the Jews? For avos, but our patriarchs, Asu kemaaseihem, they did similar activities on a physical level to what the plishtim did, but with a different focus. Binyanei olam haba, regarding aspects of the world to come. V'tzorcha nefesh, and needs of the soul, v'lo v'tzorcha guf, and not needs of the body. V'heim b'mashi hishtamshu v'osam kochos yinam lazeh, and therefore that which the patriarchs expended efforts to acquire. So these plishtim use those same efforts to acquire this worldly pleasures. And that's the concept, hustimas habeeres tavos. That's the concept of plugging up the wells that the patriarchs dug. In other words, the patriarchs, if you recall on Shabbos a couple of weeks ago, we discussed the Be'er Miriam. They did the Be'er Mayim Chaim. And we explained the idea was, from the early Lubavitch Rebbe, that its idea is the ability to excavate. They have the ability to excavate deep into one's own self, to bring out the depths of what the human being really is, to bring out the depths of one's neshama. And that needs a degree of exploration and excavation. And that's what the patriarchs were doing when they were digging. You know, they're on a physical sense, they were digging a physical well, but obviously there's a spiritual concept behind it. And that's the idea of those lower waters, the waters that are beneath the surface. We said, if you recall, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece from the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the idea being that when you the water, the higher waters that come from above that fill the oceans and the lakes and the seas, those waters are not so sweet. But when you dig down into the earth, and the earth is ugly and dirty and filthy, but what you find underneath that, and when you find a spring, it's the sweetest water. And that's the idea when a person has to dig deep inside oneself. And when a person looks at himself and says, oh, I did so many averis, I'm such a physical person. And you don't necessarily see such beautiful things outside, on the surface. But when you dig beneath and you excavate, you can find the sweetest waters. You can find the sweetest Jew in that neshama that they have. And that's what the patriarchs were doing. You need to have the courage to be an explorer. To explore the skeletons in your life. You have to explore the person that you are on the surface. And you may find a very ugly person on the outside. But then you have to dig beneath and not be afraid of what you're going to find. A lot of secular people are afraid to dig deep inside of themselves. Because they may find a person who wants to be close to Hashem. And they're very much afraid to find that. So, you know, we say, so the Plishtim, on the other hand, they're the brave seafarers who go into the violent tempests, and they will get through the seven seas, and, you know, the pirates, you know, the ancient pirates were probably the Plishtim, okay? And they didn't care in the, you know, board ships and find treasures and all that kind of stuff. You have to be very courageous to be a sailor, because you could die in a second, or a storm, you're finished. Right? But the real courage, the zelu umazet, this opposed to this, it's the same skill set. But the Jew shows a different courage. Now, the police, all that gets him is this world. So what will he get the other day? Some riches? Some money? Some, what do you call those, what do you call it? Doubloons, right? The doubloons, matey, hi, right? So, you know, walk the plank with the sharks, you know, Captain Hook, etc., you know, swashbuckling brave pirates. You know, there is a tremendous amount of courage. Don't take away from that. But all it's going to get you is this worldly pleasures. The real courageous person digs inside themselves and excavates and explores. And that's the digging of the wells. To go to dirty, ugly places to find the real neshama that's inside of them. And this is the ultimate battle between the Jew and the Plishti. They're going to read to the entire Sefer Shmuel. And you understand why now it's the Plishti. We didn't have the Plishti until now. Because it comes back to the theme that we've been talking about the whole Sefer. The whole idea of Sefer Shmuel is the explosion of Nevuah. Prophecy. Now it's going to become part of what the Jewish people are all about. Prophecy only comes for people who excavate deep inside their neshamas. And at the end of the day, what does Lutzado say about prophecy? What does everybody say about prophecy? At the end of the day, you could try to be a prophet all day long, but at the end of the day, it's a gift. It's not in your control to be a prophet. You're gati umatsasi. You can work hard, and if you're lucky, you find it. It comes to you. And that's happened to Shmuel, and that's what happens to every prophet. So in this era of prophecy, you're going to have people who are excavating within their neshamas. So if you have such a spiritually strong force trying to bring itself into the realities of life, then God always will create a negative opposite spiritual reality. We're going to have the exact same force going in a different area. That's the Plishtim, where the great explorers. And they're not going to allow the Jews, they're going to stop the Jews from developing and exploring and excavating deep inside themselves. That's what the whole idea of this whole Sefer is always doing. And why is it that punk, that nation of non-Jews, bothering us? Because it's the same spiritual quality that they're fighting over. So let's read the second paragraph. V'zeinim milchamim Plishtim. And this is the idea with the war of the Philistines. Shehishchil mimo Shimshon. Okay, we had it with Shimshon as well, right? But ad David HaMelech, until the times of David HaMelech. Shehu HaGomer, he's the one who finishes it off. David is the one who finally gets rid of the Plishtim. Ki li'olam Yehuda v'dan. Remember what we learned from Dan ad Beersheva last week. Ki li'olam Yehuda v'dan v'chubarim. Kumov Melechas Mishkan. We always know that the tribe of Yehuda, which is the greatest of the tribes, and Dan, which is the lowest of the tribes, they always combine together in building spiritual things, as we find in the Zohar and Parshas Vayechi, and also Gam Elasin in the future. And that was Shimshon was from Sheva Dan, and David is from Sheva Yehuda. So Shimshon starts it. He's from Sheva Dan, the lowest of the tribes, and Yehuda, David from Yehuda finishes it, who's from the highest of the tribes. And that's what they were dealing with. And we can skip a couple lines, as we already learned that Yaakov was hoping that Shimshon could have been the Mashiach. But now that they were connected together, the two of them together will fight against the Pelishtim. The Iskam, look at the bolded line again. The Iskam will come as Pelishtim. And what is this engagement in the war with the Pelishtim? Hainu Nitziuch Osam Koach Diagati Matzos V'Yom HaMazeh Raklich Nisa L'Kedusha. The war against the Plishtim is this battle of the power of Yagati Umatzasi. The power of, I make my effort, I explore, and look what I find. That's a power. That's a spiritual power. The Plishtim use it only for this worldly activities. And the Jew, as all of these spiritual wars are all about, all these spiritual wars are, can the Jew take that spiritual energy, and so to speak, suck it out of the Plishtim? Because when it's used for the side of evil, it's always used with a tremendous amount of force, much more than for the side of good. And to suck it out, as it were, from the side of the Plishtim, and to bring it into the spiritual realm, to be able to use it for bringing your Olam Haba, your next worldly activities. So that's what he's saying, to take it from Inyanei Olam Hazeh, Rak Lachniso Latusha, bring it into Kedusha, as it says in the Zohar in many places. So therefore, and really it's also gets based on, the Plishtim is just, the next step after Mitzrayim. See, it's a little bit different than Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, on the other hand, comes from Mitzar Yam, narrow waters. Because the Mitzrayim, they didn't have to be, deep sea divers. Because they had the Nile River right there. Egypt was the exact opposite. Egypt is the place of immorality. Immorality, lust, all these things. You don't have to be an explorer for immorality. You don't have to explore it. It's there. It's right there. Just find the next available person. You don't have to explore. You don't go, immoral people are not deep at all. There's nothing deep about it. It's purely taiva. Something, nothing to be, you know, that, wow, we discovered taiva. We discovered lust. Discovered the secretary. I mean, it's right there. The Nile River was right there. The water was there. They didn't have to go anywhere to find water. It was there all the time. It was very narrow water, right? So there was an intense development of the culture as it was without any exploration. So what the Plishtim is the opposite. They go out and they have to work hard. And then they're blessed to find. And that became the new threat. So when the Plishtim set themselves in Pasuk Tes, let's be Anoshim Plishtim. Let's be Plishti men. They're saying, you know, we're proud seafaring explorers. And it's not proper for us to subjugate ourselves to the Jewish people. Because the Jewish people take all that same force and they focus on spiritual issues, not on secular issues. And this is the spiritual battle that's going to happen throughout the Sefer Shmuel Alta we have over here. Okay, with that little introduction, I think it's a very important one, because that's we're going to need all the time we think about the Plishtim. Now, we move on to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yes, ma'am.
This idea of them flooding up the wells, they, on some level, understand what it was that the Jewish people
were doing. Sure,
the Plishtim.
Yeah, they say, we don't want to explore spiritually.
We don't want anyone else.
Yeah, but, you know, right. I mean, yeah, they represent a cultural force. You know, it's very interesting, you know, for example, certain communities, you know, are very much against other communities existing. It's not so much that certain cultures, certain types mistaken cultures, erotic cultures, you know, they're like against other people's viewpoints. You know, let's take, for example, the radical PETA group, right? You know, okay, you want to hold that animals have certain rights, but you know, other people are allowed to hold different than you. You know what? Someone else is allowed to have a steak dinner. Someone else is allowed to have a furry hat. Wonder who. Right? You know, and you go out in the public and people said, hey, why'd you kill an animal for that? You know, and then they'll take a permanent magic marker and mess up your thing. You know, it's like, you have your mishigas that you think animals are like people, fine, but I don't. No, it can't be that you feel that way. You know, for all their liberal garbage, you know, liberal garbage means whatever I hold is right, that's all. You don't believe in any freedom of expression at all. And there's other deviant groups that we'll not get into, but I think anyone can understand if you come, think about who we're talking about. Right? So that's the same thing with the Plishtim. This is what we represent, and we don't want anything else like this in the world, because it's a threat. You have to remember, us normal people who eat animals and are married men to women, we pose a great threat to all the other deviants in society. Because as long as a man and a woman can live happily with fur coats,
and eating steaks,
you know, and eating steaks, people feel threatened. You think there's something wrong with us? You guys are the weirdos. So the Plishtim, who say no, you use that sense of courage for exploration for secular things. Don't any religious stuff here, you know. Why do secular Jews have such a vehemence against religious Jews? Can't you leave us alone? You're so liberal people. You don't bother with the Amish. You let them live and let live. For an Orthodox Jew who has certain standards of education in the land of Israel, and they don't want to send their children to certain schools, so the Bagatz throws 80 parents into jail. Why do you feel so threatened? What's wrong with your democratic process of Israel? Right. That just shows you that they feel threatened because they don't have the MS. If you don't have the MS, you can't tolerate someone else who may have it. That's the bottom line. So you think the police are happy to see their patriarch says, no, you gotta dig deep into yourself and become a spiritual person. No, I don't want to dig deep into myself. I'm afraid what I'm gonna find. Right, I'd rather get killed on a shipwreck, you know, because then I never have to do the scary thing of looking look. It's interesting, the whole idea, you know, what is the sign of the pirates? The skull and the crossbones. It's all death. It's no life. It's all Olam Haza. It's this world. There's no eternal existence. Imagine, would Jews ever have a symbol of the skull and crossbones? It's crazy. Now, you know, we were in the mall last week, trying to find pajamas for the boys. You'd figure that's a pretty benign activity. You know, it shouldn't be hard to find pajamas for a 10-year-old Jewish boy, right? And of course, you have to find things on sale. It's hard. It's big expenses here, right? So my wife's looking at something. She says, "Oh, this looks nice. It's a nice thing." I said, "Dear, did you look at the picture?" She wasn't. She says, "What? It's a skull and crossbones all over the pajamas. Like, what's going on? What do you mean, skull and crossbones? Like, is that something that imagine your little child should be, you know, wearing something, skull and crossbones?"
It's as popular in girls as it is in boys.
I'm just saying, it's a little mishigas. It's disgusting. You know, all these movies with vampires and it's death. It's back to Egypt. Egypt was a society that was just totally enamored with death. Yiddishkeit's a living religion. Because we know we live forever, so we don't want that. We should make pajamas, we should have Borough Park pajamas of well springs. A bear. A spring water gushing up the pants, you know, like, that's the difference. They can't tolerate, the police couldn't tolerate. You go to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to Eretz Yisrael, we gotta finish off these people. Eretz Yisrael is a place you dig deep and find the wells. Right? But the police, they don't want to see that in anybody. So they knew what they were doing, guns fine. Alright, moving on to Yud Aleph. And now, unfortunately, we're coming to the sad part of the story. Okay, so the Jews fell in battle. We're on Pasuk Yud Aleph. Va'aron Elohim nilkoch. And the Ark of Hashem was taken. Second tragedy. First one we said 30,000 people died. And the third tragedy, Ushnei b'nei Eli Mesu, Chofni u'Pinchas. And the two sons of Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, died. It's interesting, and I don't have an answer to this. It doesn't say they were killed. Horgu. It should say they were horgu. They were killed. It's a mesu, as if they died, like a regular death. You know, just, they got old and they died. It's a very interesting, terminology to use. Okay, I don't have an answer to that. Anyway, moving on to Yud Beis. Now, Vayaretz Ish Binyamin Me'al Ha'Marocha. So someone from the tribe of Binyamin. And we already know he is identified as Shaul, who's going to be the new king sooner or later. So he comes from the battlefield, Vayavo Shiloh Vayamahu. He comes to Shiloh on that day, Umadav Kruim Vadoma Arosho, and his uniform is ripped, and there is dirt on his head. Meaning to say, he's really, battle-worn. Right? And we said he grabbed the luchos with him. Vayavo, and he comes, Vine Eli Yosheva Kise, and Eli, the elderly Eli, who's 98 years old now, he's sitting on his chair, Yad Derech, next to the road, Mitzapa, waiting to find out what's going on, waiting to hear news from the battlefield. Ki hayo libo chared al Har Elokim, because his heart was very much afraid to what might happen to the Holy Ark. V'ha'ish bo lahagid ba'ir, and the man, Shaul, came to inform the city, v'tis'ak kol ha'ir, and the entire city gathered together and cried out. Now, the Malbim explains exactly what the logistics was going on over here, so we can... We're not going to be surprised at what happened over here. A couple of questions are obvious, as you'll see from the next pasuk. This messenger, or this person from the Mavasir, the informer, Shaul, it appears he did not first come to Eli. And that's a question. Why didn't he come first to Eli? And tell Eli, everybody knows he's the main man. Who are you going to give the bad news to first? You give it to Eli, question number one. And question number two, we know, for example, when Yaakov Avinu had to be informed that his son Yosef was alive, the brothers gave a lot of thought to how they were going to inform him because they didn't want to surprise him with such shockingly good news that he could die from that. And they came up with a whole plan how Serach Bas Asher was going to play some music, And Yaakov would be settled from the music, and then during the song she would mention that Yosef's alive, all to break the news gently. So Eli was an elderly man, and he said, should have been consideration to break the news to him gently, as we see that's not what's gonna happen in a minute. So how could it be they didn't have a sensitivity to break the news gently to him? And that's, so therefore it explains that Eli is sitting on his chair by the road, looking, waiting, to find out the news. But the point is, the city had two sides. So he was on one side of the city, and the fellow came in from the other side of the city. And since he came in from the other side of the city, it takes time to reach the side that Eli was on. Meanwhile, there's a lot of people on the other side of the city, and they ask him what happened. He's telling them what happened, and then word is spreading. You see. And all of a sudden, Eli's hearing people screaming and yelling and wailing. So there isn't any time to warn him. Okay, so that's just discussing the technicals to understand why it was surprised on him, as it were. Pasuk Yedalet. Vayishma Elias kolat tzaoka, and Eli hears the voice of the screaming. Vayomer meh kol ha'amon hazeh. What is the voice of the masses over here? Vayish mihar, and the man, Shaul, hurried up. Vayavo vayagid le'Eli, he came. And he told it to Eli. It seems, the Malbim explains, that nobody wanted to tell Eli the bad news, because they were concerned for his welfare. Don't want to tell him that. And now, on the other hand, Shaul, who's coming in quickly, and he was called quickly, because there's screaming going on in the whole city. So here's the point. Malbim explains, Shaul thought that Eli already knew. Because he comes in, he tells people, they're all screaming. You know, bad news travels fast. So he figured by the time he got to Eli, Eli knew about, you know, maybe some details he didn't know. But still he knew the overall what was going on. And he just wanted to know a few details. And since Shaul was running, you know, and he was all fatomut in his head, so he didn't have time to think from it, hey, this is an old man, maybe I should be careful what's going on. So he suddenly blurts it out. He tells him. So this is again one of the mechanisms God uses to have his ultimate goals be realized. So now Pasuk Tesvav. And now the Torah is telling you how this man is being set up here. Ve'eli ben tishim u'shmona shana, and Eli is 98 years old. Ve'einav koma v'lo yochlers, and his eyes koma, like they stood, like they're not working, and he's not able to see. Very interesting parallels between him and Yitzchak. Yitzchak was blind, and one of the Medrashim says, why was he blind? There's many reasons given, but one of the reasons given is because the Torah says you shouldn't look at the face of a wicked person.
Who do you look at?
You. His son Esau. That was Esau. Esau. You look at a wicked person, it affects your eyesight. So Eli had Chafni and Pinchas. It affected their eyesight. There's a lot of other ways of spinning that. On a physical level, spiritual level. If you keep looking at wicked people, you know, you begin to become blind to the evils that exist in the world. Right? Esau's a good boy. He's trying his best. Right? I know he has a lot of challenges. But at the end of the day, he'll come out good. I think I'm going to give him a blessing. So you become blinded in a spiritual sense. You don't realize, you know, when you have a child in the house who's a bum, then, you know, bumminess becomes an acceptable standard. Because after all, he's your son. So that's unfortunate with Eli and Chafni and Pinchas. We see he didn't reprimand them as he should have. So again, that idea of blindness existed as well. So he couldn't see properly, and that's what it's saying, because if he could have seen properly, he would have seen Shaul with dirt on his head. He would have seen that everybody in the city had been ripping their garments in mourning. Okay. In other words, he's hearing noise. He's not sure what the noise is all about, but if he would have seen with his eyes what's going on, when you see a messenger from the field coming with his clothing ripped and mud on his face, you know it's bad news. See, it's gently being guided to the news. He just doesn't know what's going on over here. So that's why the surprise element is going to happen. Pasuk Tzayin, Vayomara Ish El Eli, and the man spoke to Eli and said, Anochi haba min hamaroch, I have come from the battlefield. Vani min hamaroch, anasti yom, and I have fled from the battlefield today. So what does he mean by saying that? Double expression. Number one, he's saying, I came from the battlefield and I've seen with my own eyes exactly what happened. And you might think maybe if it was a few days ago, I may have already forgotten some details. So he emphasizes and says, Nasti hayom, I ran today. Meaning to say that I'm remembering every single thing. So whatever I'm saying, it's not, maybe I'm not sure, maybe I forgot. It's total clarity when she's bringing it up over here. Okay. And therefore what I heard is very authentic. By Yomers, he says, so what happened, my son? Yud Zayin, by Yan Hamavasa, the informer replied. By Yomer, he says, this is what happened. Number one, Nos Yisrael ifnei Pelishtim. The Jews have run away from before the Pelishtim. V'gamma geifa gedolo hisavam, and a big plague struck the people. And that's the reference to the 30,000 Jews who died in battle. Number one. Reaction? No reaction. Next. V'gamma shnei vanecha meisu Chofni u'Pinchas. And your two sons, Chofni and Pinchas, died. No reaction. Baron Elohim Nilkocha, and the Ark of Hashem has been taken into captivity. Okay. So now we see, and this was all very surprising news. Remember, he wasn't expecting any, like he hears a bam, bam, bam. Three pieces of that information. So now that the Navi emphasizes in Pasuk Yirches, Vayhi kaskiro es Aron Elokim, and when he mentioned the fact that the holy ark was taken, Vayipol me'al hakise acharonis, he fell back from his chair backwards. Azoy. He just like gave a knee-jerk reaction. Goes, whoa, pushes himself, goes flying back. Okay? Va'ad yadashar, which was by the entranceway, a gateway. Va'tishaver mafrakto, and his backbone broke. Va'yomos, and he died. Ki zoke no ish, because he was an elderly man. Va'chaved, and was also heavy, a heavy man. Okay. So the Malbim says that the Pasuk is giving us three reasons of why he broke his back with this fall. Number one, he fell from his chair, meaning to say, and the chair must have been a very high chair. It's like a sort of a Kohen's throne, as it were. So number one is a high distance fall. Number two, he fell on his back. He fell backwards. And number three, he fell by the Yad HaShar, by the gateway, which was a higher place as well. And therefore, those are the three factors involved in breaking his neck, and why he died from that, because A, he was an elderly person, B, he was heavy, and also, the last point, he had really exhausted all his efforts, because it says, "Vushafat es Yisrael arboim shana," he was a judge for the Jews for 40 years, and we know that leadership sucks out all your koyach. It sucks it all out. Being a leader is a very difficult task. Right? So there you have the reasons of why he died. Pasuk Yetes, and not only he dies, but also the Kaloso, his daughter-in-law, Ashes Pinchas, the wife of Pinchas. It seems only Pinchas is mentioned, because perhaps he is the less evil of the two. Hara, she was giving birth. Hara Lala, she was at childbirth when this is all going on over here. Interesting. Vatishma Sashmua, and she hears the news too. El Halikach Aaron Elohim, that the Aaron was taken. Umeis Chamiya V'Isha, and she now hears that her father-in-law Eli dies. V'Isha, and her husband dies. Vatichra, and she like crouches. Vateled, and she gives birth. Kinefcho Latzera, because her birth pains became all overturned. She's in the throes of giving birth, and was not an easy childbirth as well. And because of this childbirth, she will die. And the pasuk, you know, it's like the whole, it's all over. It's screaming and yelling and this and that. She knows her husband's out on the battlefield. Right? And word just spreads, you know, people, you know, it's pandemonium. When pandemonium rules, people don't really understand what's going on. Ucha'es Musa, and at the time of her death, she's dying. She feels she's dying. The women who were standing by her spoke to her, and they say, Altiri, don't be so afraid, don't worry so much. At least you had a boy. Right? She didn't respond, she wasn't paying attention to them. She called this young lad, interesting expression, Lanar. He's a little baby, he's not a young lad. She calls him, his name is, this is where you get the famous word, Ikavod. Ichabod. Remember Ichabod Crane? Right? What? The headless horse. Alright? But Ichabod. Ikavod. Ikavod means a lack of honor. A missing of honor. Ikavod. We don't have any honor. Lamer saying, Gola Kavod Yisrael. The honor of the Jews has gone into exile. Why? Because the Ark of Hashem was taken away. The Chamiya V'Isha, and the fact that her father and husband died. Chavez, and now this is an interesting point that will have to be reviewed, and we'll have to elaborate on this tomorrow. V'Tomer, and she said, Golo Kavod Yisrael, the honor of the Jewish people has gone into exile. Didn't we just say that in the Pasuk before? Kinel Kach Aron Elkim, because the Aron Elkim was taken. So this leads to a lot of discussions, a beautiful Arve Nachal that we'll Mitzvah Shem do tomorrow. And some more commentary to Malbim, but this parak ends on a very down note. As we see, it's the end of the old era. Totally cleans house. in one day, boom, you lose the two corrupt sons, you lose the father who doesn't admonish them, you lose the ark, you lose everything. But from that source of destruction will ultimately be the seeds of redemption as well, which we'll elaborate on tomorrow, Mr. Shem. Shkoyach for coming. And everyone's a little bit tired today.
There will be enough people. On their way, to leave on time. One of the girls says, I'm at 8 o'clock.